Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the One Thing podcast. I'm so excited today. We have Adam Hergenrother, who is the founder and CEO of the aptly named Adam Hergenrother Companies, a thriving billion-dollar organization ranging from real estate companies to an award-winning development and construction company to leadership training, but here today to talk to us about his new book, The 200% Life. Welcome, Adam.
Thank you so much. And Nikki, Chris, thank you for all the work that you do and how much energy I know how much goes into all of these interviews and all the extra work that you guys do for the audience. So thank you from everybody for all the work you do.
Oh, thank you.
Well, thank you for that. I have to say, I love the subtext of this book, which is your guide to spiritual growth and business without meditating on a mountaintop. And I just personally want to thank you because I think so often we hear these gurus talk about their path to self-actualization. And it's like, I don't have the time, money, or space to go sit on a mountain and like drink only green tea for 6 months and find myself. I need to do this while I am also doing life. And I feel like that's what this book is about. Can you expand on it a little bit?
Yeah, thanks. You know, it's funny when we came up with the, anyways, we'll jump into there. But, you know, for me, you know, I grew up, you know, kind of living somebody else's life, like sharing a lot of white lies that were just trivial, trying to be somebody that I wasn't. Ended up gaining 100 pounds overweight. And I ended up as a freshman in high school, like in the drugs, failing classes, and really that role model student you wanted your kid to hang out with, right? And so one day I just woke up and I realized that, you know, I can't say it the same way I did now, but it wasn't like some spiritual movement or some energy there. I just was like, this is not the way that I want to live my life. And so I ended up losing 100 pounds overweight, got pretty heavily into sports and kind of started moving my path through there. And we can come back and put a pin on any of these things you want to, but I'm going to fast forward to answer your question here. I started then applying that kind of really what that night did for me was realizing that I could orient my life into a direction that I wanted to take it. And with energy and work ethic and kind of dedication, you can pretty much accomplish anything that you want to. Well, during that time, I also developed a very large ego. And especially as I started coming through college, I worked harder than most people. So I started receiving more rewards and I worked on, people don't know this, but I worked on Wall Street for a little while and I was ranking up there. And then at the time I ended up staying up in Vermont and starting a business from buying my first piece of real estate when I was in college. And I had this goal ever since I came out of college that I really wanted my parents to know who I was. I wanted my parents to be proud. I wanted the world to understand who I was. I wanted the world to see that some kid in Vermont could do this. And I did that, right? It was 12 hours a day, 7 days a week for a long period of time. I don't consider it work. I actually really enjoyed that phase of my life. I was in a relationship, but we didn't have kids. And so I really kind of lent it to itself. But I'll tell you where I'm going with this is in 2006, 2007, I had this financial number in my life and I had set out to get $500,000 net income. And somehow I had thought into this belief that if I got $500,000 net income, that somehow there was going to be some fruit tree in my backyard filling me with inner peace once I hit this. And I remember as a holiday party, I was talking to my mom and she's the most unassuming individual that's there. You could really care less about money at all. You could have told her you won the lottery and she would be like, that's great, right? And so I said, hey, I made this $500,000, kind of saying it loud enough for everyone in the room to hear it, right? And my mom's like, well, that's great, pass the ketchup. And in that moment, I realized that like she didn't care. And I also realized, and I started asking a deeper question. I said, well, do I even care? And the answer was no. And so then I'm not going to use the word depressed, but I got the feeling inside that I thought I was going to get. You know, this is what I've learned what most people think of defining success as. When they say go out and be successful, what they're really saying is go out there and make enough money, get enough power, enough authority, enough title, enough leverage in your life to be able to control the situations around you so that the inner experience that you have is the inner experience that you're looking for. And for me, that inner experience, when I went and bought into that level of success, wasn't happening. In fact, it started going the opposite when I realized that it wasn't going to work the way that I was doing it. And so I got into transcendental meditation almost a week after that moment. And that was kind of my gateway drug into spirituality, if you will. It kind of gave me this whole new explanation of life. And so I started going down this path, but at the same time, I really enjoyed building businesses. And I had bought into the concept that being a spiritual person was living in the Himalayas, you know, reciting haikus around a fire, sitting Indian style, which isn't even comfortable sitting Indian style. Like, right. Like it's like, that's what I'd bought into. And, you know, I've got chances to speak and spend time with a lot of large kind of individuals out there. Like, for instance, like Eckhart Tolle, one of the things that he said was like, one of the most, the question that I get the most every day is, why are you in Starbucks? And he's like, well, what do you mean? They're like, well, why are you in Starbucks? He's like, well, because I like drinking coffee. I like having wine. So I think people in the business community have this concept that, or any leadership role that you have, that if I'm going to go down this kind of spiritual path, and that has a word to it, they, a lot of times people soften it with personal growth. But if I'm going to go down this path, then I have to wear a white robe, and I've got to like not be successful, and I can't build a business, or I can't fire people, or I can't have accountability, or I can't set goals, or any of these things. And it's really, again, the 200% life is 100% inner, 100% outer, with this idea that you don't actually have to give up anything to work on your inner state.
So much to unpack there, Adam. And can you walk us through, I do think there's an evolution for so many business people as you start to go down this spiritual path, because I think a lot of people create a story in their head that if I start down this path, it's going to make me less productive.
Yes.
Like, did that ever come up for you? Did you have to work through that? And if you did, how?
Yeah. For the first 3 years, I was kind of lost, to be honest with you. I found myself really wanting to go all in from this inner experience and really do that deep work that was there from a personal side. And yet I found myself drifting away from the business almost because I bought into the concept that I shouldn't be holding people hard accountable, or I shouldn't be firing anybody. And really, that's not the take either. And so really the goal with that is to understand what is your primary responsibility, which for me, the primary is always your inner state first, your inner being. And we'll work backwards in terms of that, because I think the most important thing a leader can do, well, let me make a comment, like a leader's work product is decisions, right? That's what leaders do. They make decisions. I think organizations that are marginally successful versus exceptionally successful are the ones that make higher quality decisions every day. And so what I found by going inwardly was it actually was giving me the ability to make a higher quality decision. And so the more that I was clear, the more that I was calm, the more that I was neutral, the more that I wasn't trying to be right or trying to prove that I was right, I was able to see the solution differently. And from there, I was actually able to come to the table with better ideas. And I was coming to the table with willing to be wrong and finding solutions for things, which ended up with a better overall decision outcome from the framework of leadership. But in the beginning, there was this period where I felt lost there. And part of working through there is to trust in the process that the clearer you are, the better decision-making that you'll be able to do.
I feel really fortunate because I get the opportunity to work with so many amazing people in our community and our customers and get to be a part of their world. And they trust me with being a part of their goals. And more often than not, almost everyone is focused on health. And at the core of that is diet and eating a balanced diet. But eating this kind of diet, it's a huge time commitment and it's easy to get knocked off track. That's why it's so great to have a solution when you don't have the time to do the prepping and the cooking and the cleanup, but you still want to eat healthy. That's why we partner with Factor, and Factor is chef-created, dietitian-approved meals that are ready to go in just 2 minutes. With Factor, there's no prep, no mess meals. Factor meals are ready to heat and eat, so there's no prepping, cooking, or cleanup needed. The variety of different options and meals that they have is really impressive, but go see for yourself. Head to factormeals.com/150 and use code 150 to get 50% off. That's code 150 at factormeals.com/150 to get 50% off.
I love what you said about understanding the seeing the solution differently. Is it also even maybe first understanding the problem differently because you have that clarity of thought?
Yeah. You know, most people, when they enter into a meeting or into a one-on-one, they walk in there with an agenda of what they need from the situation. Right. And this is a technique I used to do early on. Before I got out of my truck, I would sit there for about 15 seconds and remind myself, I'm not here to get anything from my employees. I'm not here to get anything from my clients. I'm here just to contribute to whatever's being asked of me. And so I certainly didn't win on that all the time, by the way, and still got triggered many times. But that was the intention of how I wanted to start my day of going into it. So, you know, with that, you really bring this ability to, the problem becomes undisguised. The only reason why people have trouble making decisions is because what they're really doing in a decision-making situation is you have a mental rehearsal of how each decision is going to go on. And then you're trying to see how your inner experience reacts to that movie that you've just created in your mind. And that's what decisions. So it's like, okay, well, how do I look in this outfit? You already know how you feel in the outfit, but yet when you go and you look in the mirror, what you're really doing is seeing, does this hit my stuff in a good way or a bad way? And then the stuff that hits in a good way, you buy it, right? The same thing that you do when you're making a business decision, you're going, does this impact me in a good way? That's what most people do. And if it does, you go down for that way. You make that decision instead of looking at the problem from an undisguised standpoint. All that means is I'm not in there looking for a way to make this better for me. I'm in there for a way of looking better for the entire overall of the organization itself.
Well, and I think this concept goes back to when I think about leadership, I always say a great leader is someone who has first and foremost understood how to lead themselves. You can't hope to lead other people if you haven't learned to lead yourself. Similarly, I think it's challenging to find solutions or clarity on problems if you don't have clarity internally. Yes. If internally you are a hot mess and not aligned, it's really challenging to bring clarity to a problem or to bring clarity to a conversation. And this all goes back to a concept you talk a lot about in the book, which is this idea that so often we're looking outwardly for the praise or to solve the problem or for the answer, when really we need to turn inward in order to get that clarity, in order to lead, in order to pretty much do anything worthwhile. It's got to start internally as opposed to externally. Can you expand on that?
Yeah, it's a beautiful question. You know, everybody wakes up with trying to manipulate what I call the nouns, right? People, places, and things, so that the inner experience they have is the one that they really want. It's almost like you have an inner thorn in there and you don't want any of the, I don't want to lose money. I don't want to have anybody leave me. I don't want, you know, my kids to act a certain way. And you have these thorns, this drama, the scars, some scars, whatever you want to refer to them as, inside there that you're trying not to get hit, because when they get hit, it feels very disturbed in there, right? It just feels uneasy. And you don't have to be in a spirituality or psychology to understand, you know what the energy is like in there. Like, Chris, you understand the difference between anger and irritation. And then you go, no, I'm not irritated anymore. I'm jealous or I'm frustrated, right? You already know the subtle differences that you can feel inside. And so what we're trying to do is get what we want outside so the experience inside is better. Well, that is an indirect way of kind of getting what you want, right? And so for what most people are doing is they're going out there and they're trying to manipulate the world so that people show up the way they want, they act the way they want, their business does the way they want to, and they're trying to put it all together every day when they wake up, which is why so many people are waking up in like putting on a jacket of anxiety, because it's exhausting trying to hold that whole mess up every single day. And that's why people are stressed. That's why people are trying to increase their lifestyles. They're trying to be somebody they're not. It's because literally their self-concept they've created is running their life by telling them what they could go do to turn them on for a moment. It's the highest drug that anybody will ever do and the most addicted thing that people are addicted to. Whereas if you just take a more direct approach, right, which is, why don't I just go and do the work that removes the thorns, that removes the drama, the samskaras, the any type of damage that is done in there, so that I can already feel stillness, peace, fulfillment. You fill in the name, whatever word you want to use there. You just feel lighter. You feel happier. You feel more joyful. Then you take that part of you and you bring that into whatever activity that you're doing. Remember, spirituality is never about changing what you're doing. It's about changing the part of you that is interacting with reality so that that part of you is not disturbed from how reality reacts to you interacting with it. And if you can really focus on that, that becomes a gift for you and a gift for everybody else around you, because you are contributing versus walking in there and being a taker.
I think so many people, as leaders, you want the environment to adapt to you. And you hear things like here, these are my values, like respond to me accordingly, or here's my personality assessment, and this is how like everyone should adapt to me. And there's truth in that, and like having higher level communication, like people being aware of each other's tendencies, but the real default should be to look how you can solve yourself to be adaptable to the environment, not the other way around. And I think as a leader, it's so important that you are trying to figure that out and these higher forms of self-awareness.
I really believe that people are realizing that focusing on the world doesn't work. It's not wrong. Just going to get what you want doesn't work. I mean, think about how many things in life that you once wanted that were luxury items. Are they luxury items anymore? No. And then how long did that really last for? A moment? And the next thing you know, there was another luxury item that you want. You know, economics teach us one of the deepest laws of spirituality, which is the law of diminishing return, which is basically one, as you know, once you get something, the more you get of it, the less you want of it, which is why everyone is still waking up trying to get something anew. I mean, they're trying to get a new hit of energy from some spice in their life. So the law of diminishing return will always be in effect if you play in the outer world. It's a law. It will always be that way. That's why 99% of people are waking up playing in the 100% external world and not realizing that the 100% inner world will give them everything that they're looking for. But it doesn't mean that you have to go sit in a mountaintop. It just means that that becomes the first thing that you do is put yourself together, right, as you said, and then being able to go out there and take that part of you and bring it in the external world. You know, it's I always like to simplify spirituality. If you think about like the one thing, right, of this, I could have a couple one things, but like the one thing I think if people take away and think about from spirituality context is it just gives you the ability to handle reality. Let me give you a couple examples here. If you are a leader and you can't handle an employee quitting, then you're no good to the situation. If you're a leader and you can't handle a lawsuit, then you're no good to the situation. If you can't handle a customer being upset with you that writes you an email, then you're no good to the situation. If you're a doctor and you can't handle the sight of blood, well, then you're no good being a doctor. If you're a parent and you can't handle your kid freaking out in a grocery store, you're no good to the situation. So what spirituality says, or at least how I interpret this and how we write about in the book, is a model for having to be able to handle the situation so you can actually handle it. Instead of the situation handling you and then you reacting from the lower self, which doesn't do any good to anybody in a leadership position, from your kid's standpoint, from your partner's standpoint, or anybody else around you.
One habit that my wife and I are really proud of that we put in place over the last couple of years is a monthly budget review. Getting on the same page about how we're investing and spending has been a game changer for us. Whether you're budgeting by yourself or you're financial planning with another, it can be tedious. You're pulling together multiple sources of information, updating multiple spreadsheets. But the good news is it doesn't have to be that difficult. That's why I want to recommend Monarch Money. Monarch is a top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. With Monarch, you can create custom budgets, track progress towards financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/one thing. What I like about Monarch, it's intuitive. Unlike other apps that I've used in the past, it's simple. The intuitive design makes it easy to set up and customize. It allows for collaboration, so you can collaborate with your partner, family, financial advisor. It's customizable, it's customer-focused, and it's ad-free. After trying out Monarch myself, I understand why it's a top-rated personal finance app. And now, listeners of this podcast will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/one thing. That's monarchmoney.com/one thing for your extended 30-day free trial.
I think this is an important conversation, especially as it pertains to leadership, Adam, because I find that a lot of people resist this. And I have to imagine you see this in your leadership training. We see so many leaders resist this because it feels counterintuitive. It's like, no, I want my external world to change. Therefore, I'm going to strong arm this person or this situation or whatever it is as much as possible, because I certainly can't hope to change the external world by changing the internal world. And yet, if you're a follower of spirituality, I personally am a big follower of Stoic philosophy, which is all about the internal world and how we interpret these external forces or people or whatever it might be. And ultimately, we have to come back to it's all in how we choose to show up and how we choose to take it, which is, I think, a lot of what you're saying right now. But how do you help people work through? I have to imagine, how do you help other people work through? And I have to imagine you had to work through the trust of building yourself first and putting the pieces of you together first, hoping that all the other things would fall into place. And I think that there's an evolution there too, that every individual has to have who goes on this journey, because like I said, it feels counterintuitive and most of us will resist it.
Yeah, Nikki, that was very wonderfully said. Well, I mean, I'm still dealing with it every single day, right? It's a lifelong journey, right? I mean, every time you think you're somewhere, you get triggered and you realize how much more work that you have to do.
Shoot, Adam, I was hoping you were going to tell me that I got to be done. I'm done with this at some point.
I know. It's just every time you peel back one onion, you think you're somewhere and you are for like a week. And then all of a sudden you go, I got more work to do. And it just, I think Oprah once said, she's like, when does this personal growth ever stop? Right. And it's like, it doesn't if you go down that path. It is counterintuitive. And I think what the mistake that people make is that they, look, they've bought into the idea, which is what our society reinforces, by the way, that if I go out there, again, that's why I labeled that in there of defining what success is for most people, is like trying to get the outside the way I want it to so I can have the inner experience versus actually going in there and doing this deep work. I mean, Stoic philosophy is the same thing that we're talking about. We're just labeling with different words and different ways of saying it, but it's just working inwardly first so that you can take that part of you and bring it to whatever situation that you're bringing yourself into, because that is really the gift that you're giving to anybody, right? I mean, I think about like the mission that I have in my life, if you want to call it a mission or an ethos or whatever it is, which is to raise the moment so that the moment is better off for having passed by my consciousness. So that way you can, it doesn't matter how my kids are acting or how my businesses are operating or what life is throwing at me. I can always raise the moment. You can always interact with that from a different way. And I don't even really think of it as like serving and contribute, because those words almost drop at some point. Like, would an apple tree consider itself contributing to nature? It just does its thing. At some point when you, the only reason why you would label yourself as contributing is one is to textualize it and actually have a conversation about it, but it's also then to then tell somebody that you're actually contributing versus just doing it, right? I mean, and that becomes the beauty of being able to show up and not be a taker, is that you can actually show up and contribute in the highest form that you can for other people that are around you.
Do you find yourself having to reinvest in the long-term strategy and like, hey, this, we got to play the long game with this, because especially for somebody who is newer to maybe experimenting with this and things that would typically trigger them or short-term decisions or the politics of other leaders around them, all the things are saying, hey, like try to influence the outside world, but you got to know that this is a long game. And do you see that also?
Yeah. I mean, this is a very, very, it's a marathon, right? But you can also have fun with it, right? Like take it in as like, you know, if, for example, like I think, you know, modeling any behavior is the best. And the other day, like my wife was eating a chip and it was like irritating me. Like, no, like if she's just eating a chip, like it's quiet. And I'm like, oh my God, this anger inside me right now for my wife eating a chip, and she's reading a book. I'm reading a book. And I'm like, what is going on here? And like every crunch, you know what I'm talking about? Like just gets deeper and I'm like getting more irritated. And I stand up and I'm like, I need to leave the room because I'm going to yell at you for eating a chip, but I'm going to yell about make it something completely other than the chip itself. And I can't handle that right now. So I'm going to go be mature and I'm going to walk outside and leave the room and then come back. And I did. It's like, and she just looks at me, cause I do that all the time. And she was like, okay. And like, I walk out, walk back in. She's like, are you good? I'm like, I'm good. Right. And so yes, it's a long term, but you have fun and play with that. It's like, nobody wants you to be like, nobody would sign up and be like, disturb me from somebody eating a chip next to you, right? Like it just shows up, right? It's you're now all of a sudden feeling frustrated. And so, you know, it's never about personal growth. It's never about not expressing it's never about not recognizing your feelings. It's about not expressing them. And so I use, to answer your question from before, Nikki, which I really didn't get to, which is the technique that I really use on an everyday basis, which is relax, release, and act. It's RRA. The first thing, so again, in this chip scenario situation here, right? It's like when I found myself getting irritated, the first thing I did is I tried to relax. And so I just kind of dropped my shoulders. You can do a 3-2-1 relax. You can just relax. Now, a key thing to this when you're starting working on this, it's whether it's the driver in front of you, something that your kid said. Again, it's something that has 100% cost and zero benefit. Like for instance, in the chip situation, it's 100% cost. If I yell in this, there's zero benefit I get from this. Complaining about the weather is 100% cost, zero benefit, right? And so nobody would take that bet in business. So why are you taking it in your personal life or in life in general? So the first thing is you never want to try to relax the energy itself, because every event has its own nature. And so anger's nature is to be angry. Like a wolf doesn't eat grass, right? And you don't gonna see a chipmunk eating a deer, right? Like, so it's like the nature of things has its own nature. So when anger shows up, you relax behind the anger. And so you're allowing it to do it. Then it comes the second R, which is you release it, which is allowing it to work its way through you so that it's not disturbing you. So then you can act with clarity. And that's why, like, as an example, and everyone knows this and probably listening, you probably had one happen today. You see an email with a subject line come in. Before you even open the email, you're already disturbed. You're messed up. You can feel the change in the force, right? Like you're like, oh, God, right? Like whatever it is, like you just know it's already messed with you. And so right then in that moment, then you start reading the email and you're like, are you kidding me? Or what are they doing? And you're starting to type, right? And you've even done some work on yourself. So you go, I'm going to delete this line, right? And you take that one line out, but you still send the email. The next day when you've relaxed, you've released that form of energy and you're at a better sense of clarity, you then read it and you go, man, I shouldn't have included that in there, right? Like it was just there. That's the example of in each moment that we're in, if we're willing to relax, release, and then act, you're acting with more purity. You're acting with more authenticity, which is a word that people want to use much more in their life is I want to be more authentic. Well, then stop reacting from the lower self. If you do, you'll be way more authentic. The lower self always wants to be right, always thinks it's right, always wants to be in control. And it's all about I, me, or my. How do I feel about my kids acting this way? How do I feel about my business going this way? How do I feel about the fact that my partner, you know, doesn't like to ski or whatever it is that it's there? It's all about me or my, and it's this self-concept that it's a self-concept that you've created that you're staring at. Instead, again, the technique here and the highest long form that you can do is always relax, release, and act. That also goes, and I'll stop, but it also goes with this, the word surrender that's being thrown out there. I think people hear the word surrender and they instantly think passivity. It's not about stopping when you're being chased by a lion to allow it to eat you, or to allow your business to go into bankruptcy, or allow people to run all over you, or to not fire people or not hire people. Surrender means what you're surrendering, and this is critical. You're surrendering the part of you that is not okay with what just happened in reality. The minute you can surrender that, that's the other form of saying just relax, but I'm just explaining that a little bit more because that's the first step in this. If you can surrender to the fact that you feel disturbed, it releases itself. And once an ignored guest quickly leaves. So once you ignore it, the energy starts to dissipate. Like you guys aren't bothered by the fact that a tree fell over by my house yesterday, hit a fence, are you? Like I don't see any of you guys didn't get on here. You weren't bothered by it, right? Or the fact that there's like some animals that are over there burning in a hole. Like nobody's bothered by that. 99% of life, you're just not bothered by. But yet these few things, you can count on five things that happen that we don't want to happen or we're trying to avoid and they happen and we get bothered. That's when you deploy that first relax. You surrender to the energy, you let the energy go. Then the solution becomes undisguised. And that's when you act. That's when the highest form that you can do is take massive action. And to me, it makes you a wildly fierce competitor in business because it gives you a leg up on anybody else who's not doing this deep work.
I always say it's a releasing of the why me. So yeah. I think that's where we typically go. Yeah, well, that's I think where most people go when the bad thing happens or what we perceive to be the bad thing. We go directly into the why me. And the truth is everyone has a why me probably every day. Like we our why me's grow. Certainly the things that used to be challenges are, I'm sure for you too, for everybody earlier in their career are not today. The why me's expand, but you're never getting away from them. I was laughing so hard at your chip story, Adam, because the other day I was sitting in bed with my husband and I was going to sleep and he was turning pages of his book. And I was like, who could turn a page that loud? Exactly. And I was like, I cannot say it. Like, I can't say anything about this. This is the most unreasonable thing to be frustrated about. So I was having a good laugh because I had to have the same conversation with myself. It's funny, the things that can bother us, right? Especially when you do this type of work, because you get sort of trained, so to speak, at dealing with the big problems. Yeah. But it's often those little things, the chips, the pages of the book that really set us off.
Yeah.
I wanted you to expand on this from a leadership perspective, because I think sometimes, again, we can resist this type of work because it feels like it takes longer. We can resist the take a breath and relax and release because it takes longer to sort through the problem. And I think as leaders, we sometimes, especially when we're running big lives or big businesses, we can start spiraling in this high adrenaline of I'm here to solve and do and go and action and go, 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 go. And we sometimes forget to use these tools because it feels like it takes longer, not realizing that I believe, and I'd love your perspective on this, that in the end, it actually saves us time, because then I don't have to go back and undo me snapping at one of my employees or that email that I fired off that caused a much bigger problem because I had a bad attitude about it, or that thing I said in frustration or anger to my spouse when they were eating their chips, which I didn't really mean. I was just totally in a headspace I shouldn't have been. I'd love to get your perspective on this.
Well, I think you answered it beautifully. I mean, that's exactly it, right? I mean, it's again, if you know, to shoot an arrow, you can throw it from zero and it'd probably go a couple inches, or you can pull the bow back and release it. And it takes longer to pull the bow back, but it goes a lot further. And so every time that you're relaxing and releasing, you're pulling the bow back further. And so while it may seem like you're going backwards, what you're really doing is you're building momentum. That momentum then takes off and then quadruples the speed at which you could ever build in your entire life. And my business kind of life is a reflection of that, right? When sure, I made decent money when I was in my 20s, but then when I started really doing deep work inwardly and focusing on that, which, you know, in the beginning, it's like 99% ego and then 1% of this deep work, right? And it was like, then it was like 97.5%, whatever it is, you kind of keep sliding down that scale. But at some point, it starts to create this tipping point. And the same thing for me. And if I started that in 08, you know, kind of era, around 011 is when my businesses really started to take off. And then it was like one thing in 012, then 013. And the next thing you know, in 14, 15, like you're building this much larger company until where it goes. So it was almost like building your, it's like the same thing. And like, if you're building a house, you wouldn't start building the roof. You dig the ground up, at least in Vermont, to put a foundation in to get below the frost. It's the same thing here. You want to dig below your self-concept, your ego, so you can stay rooted in places of making clarity so you can build this larger form of momentum. And besides the outward success you're going to have from that, you're just going to feel lighter. You're going to be a better human. You're going to have a better experience in life. Look, you're here for 80, 90, 100, 110, 120 years if you live in a blue zone, right? I don't know. Like, it's like you get like this short period of time. And human sapiens have been around for what? Best guess, 200, 250,000 years. The world's been here for 4.5 billion. It's like we come here and there's a 300 million page book and you read one word and you go, I know what's going on here, guys. Everyone needs to stop and pause. You know, it's really funny too about even leadership. You know, it's when did real leadership coaching come in? The 80s, 90s, right? Of like approximately where that came into it. So it's really the last 60 or so years that we've been focused on this. But for thousands of years, they've inscribed in pyramids, know thyself, self-realization, self-hierarchy. And so they've been leaving these breadcrumbs all for as long as human sapiens have been here, that which gives us the ability to abstractly think about ourselves, to do that deep work. And so while leaderships and strategies and metrics and KPIs are vitally important, they're goals. And remember, goals have a beginning and the end. They are not the purpose of your life. They always come, they always go, no matter what they are. And so the pulling back of the bow, the digging of the foundation to get deeper, gives you this bigger rock to build your house on that becomes much more stable in the midst of the biggest storm or light storms that you have in life, which will happen.
Do you find that the more rooted that platform is that you're talking about, the deeper you've dug, the more enabled you are to recognize some of these moments or these triggers that you get, or... you know, before you become hijacked, it becomes easier for you to see them as they come?
That's a wonderful question, Chris. One of the most beautiful and most powerful moments in history is the moment right before you get Velcroed to a thought or an emotion, because you have the ability to move. I think that's where willpower comes in. I think that's why we have willpower. And it's one of the most beautiful moments. The further, the deeper the work that you do, the longer that period is. The longer you can see yourself getting real close to touching that one word that's going to explode you to talk about why your husband's flipping the page over or why you're eating a chip, you just have a longer fuse. And then so the deeper the work does, that starts to get longer and longer. And then it gets so far back that you just see the action is just, you were watching a six-year-old put their hand on a stove, right, for the first time. They don't know, but you can see it so clearly. And that's why the further away from your self-concept or ego you get, the more visibility into how you act, you actually show up. The other thing that it starts to do, though, is bigger things start to come up, which hurt a lot more. These samskaras or whatever it is you want to refer to them as these stored energy patterns that are inside you start to want to come up. And they're more painful. But it's the pain that releases all pain.
It's almost like you earn the right to deal with those as they come up.
Same thing in business, right? It's just, if you want to use an analogy of that, is like, if you start off as a sole proprietor in business, like you have a set of challenges. If you have 1,000 employees, the challenges are harder, they're different, and they're bigger, and they have a more of an impact. The same thing goes here. You're just digging deeper, and so you have more roots to work through than the initial ones that you're just pulling up.
Mm. I love that. I'd love for you, Adam, to walk us through. I'm going to put you on the spot from the book, because I do think that this is a really useful tool for those that are listening, is to walk us through the four phases of spiritual growth. Because I thought that you just outlined this really well. And like I said, I think sometimes this can feel so esoteric to people that they're like, I don't even know where to begin. And I thought that this was not only a great process for someone who's just beginning, but also to get clarity on this idea that this is just ongoing. Like, you're never going to put the football down and walk off this field. Like, you're just not done. So I'd love if you'd walk us through those.
Yeah. And it's kind of pretty commonplace in our era now. It's like the first stage that people kind of go through, they get some sort of orientation, you should hug everybody that wants to do the work on themselves, right? No matter what level that they're doing it, it's wonderful that they've chosen to start doing some work on themselves. But most people, when they get into, like, they go to a seminar or they start meditation or they, had some spiritual or some sort of enlightenment experience, they get into this honeymoon phase, right? Which is like, oh my God, I'm going to hang up my job. I'm going to be a spiritual teacher. I'm going to go start a podcast. Like, this is going to be like, where's Eckhart, right? Like, where is he? Let's go out. We're going to be on stage together, right? Like, it's like you get caught up in this whole like sense of like, this, like, it's, they actually call it like spiritual ego, essentially, which is like the ego just shape shifts itself. But you get in this real honeymoon phase. And I've actually, we taught this course called Project U for years. And people start going through this in the first couple of months. They're like, I don't know if I even need to finish the course. Like, you know what, Adam? Like, this has been great. Like, I'm already there, right? Like, and you
fixed me. I'm good.
Like, I'm light. Like, I'm walking around. Like, everything's wonderful. Like, this is great. And inevitably, like, everybody at all times, all of a sudden, something. And by the way, they had made improvement, right? They saw, they oriented themselves. Like, look, if you're digging into the ground, then all of a sudden you turn around, you realize you have a hole, you start coming up, you feel better, right? And so, but at some point, like, something will happen. And all of a sudden they will just lose it, right? Like, and they fall off the wagon and they send me an email or they just realize it and they go, okay, right? Like, this is not, I'm way further away from where I thought I actually was at this point. And then reality sets in, right? Which is kind of like the next step here. Like, and all of a sudden, like, reality realizes that, like, okay, I have some things to go. I'm realizing that I'm not there. But in some people I've seen in this next stage, when reality starts to set in, is they actually try to escape. Like, I've had people quit our course because they get to this point and they go, I don't want to deal with it. And they've come back 3 years later and they go, you know what? I thought I was further on. I got caught and I didn't want to deal with it right then. I go, that's awesome. You know, I'm happy to hold space for you whenever you want to do that. But people, you see that, right? They want to naturally go back when reality starts to set in. And then once you decide in your kind of path that, you know, okay, the honeymoon's over, reality sets in, the real work begins, right? Which is like this deep work that you have to do, right? It's the work that we've been explaining about, which is relax, release, and then act. By the way, to get a little granular here, when you're relaxing and releasing anger, it becomes more painful than when you're just trying to push it away. So for example, if you get an email and you start getting angry from the email, if you just sit there and allow the anger to move towards you, it's actually getting closer to you, the consciousness, but it's heating you up. It starts to burn more. It starts to become more painful before it releases. And you know, the best analogy that I can give here is like, you never had your, I'm sure you have, like, your arm falls asleep. And at the time you realize your arm is asleep, right? Or your leg or whatever it is. And all of a sudden you're going, oh, my arm's asleep. And then all of a sudden, as it starts to come back to wake, what happens? It becomes way more painful before it gets better, doesn't it? And so it's like all of a sudden, the example that I always like to use is like, my feet get really cold, especially when I'm skiing. And so, like, the other day I actually came back, my feet were so cold that I almost wanted to throw up in my car because they were thawing.
It hurts. So much. Yeah.
It hurts, right? Like, it's like that point. The same thing is like, and I kept telling myself, I'm like, I need to go through this in order to get back to normal, like, to back to myself. And it's the same kind of way of thinking about the inner work that you can do. But the problem with inner work, it's much more etheric. It's so loose. It's so quick. Like, it's, you can't see it. It's just, it's lighter than air, right? It's just, the energy is, it's so etheric. So that deep work, when you're relaxing and releasing, it's painful. Like, again, they talk about it in almost every single, you know, in spiritual book in some way, context, another. It's like, it's the pain that releases the pain. So that's where you got to be willing to do this deep work. And as you do it, again, that's like, it's really the work that begins. And then I always like to think of this in just kind of an ad lib for the kind of the fourth phase. If you kind of think of it this way, based on our conversation, which is you really start surrendering to all. And what I mean by that is that word of like surrender, which is you just start seeing life for what it is. You no longer have a pretext of how life needs to be for me to be okay. Because think of how much energy that takes. And it doesn't mean that life operates the way you want it to. It doesn't mean that your business goes the way you want it to. It doesn't mean anything. But what you are clear of when you wake up each day, I'm going to enjoy the moments that pass by me because I'm okay. I have this sign that kind of sits next to me that says, need nothing and enjoy everything. And when I need nothing, it doesn't mean that you don't enjoy everything. So you enjoy the blessings, you enjoy the wealth, you enjoy the moments. You also enjoy the other side of this. If you think about it from this context, can you imagine not having a heart? And I don't mean your physical heart. I mean a spiritual heart. The spiritual heart gives you so much depth in life. Like, what would it be like to not feel sorrow? What would it be like to not feel abundant of joy or love? So it's not what people wake up though and they go, I only want the depth of my heart that I want to have, right? And again, that is the egoic form. Instead of recognizing and going, I actually want to feel the depth of all of this. I want life to give me this idea of like Mozart playing the piano, of how low that can go when somebody dies. Like, of course you're going to feel that. Like, that's a sign of love. And again, because if you don't feel that, you know, again, people die every second. You don't feel that from every single person, versus like having a newborn baby or an intimate moment or success in business. And you feel so much higher on that same notes that it can play. So you just start truly surrendering and think about this, of how much we trust in life, right? Like, nobody here can make an eyeball, right? Nobody can make yourself feel better when you're sick. Sure, you take some vitamin C and you rest, but you don't do any of that. Or how about the fact that when you were 10, you looked into a body that was 4'8", and now you're looking at a body that, for me, has some gray hairs. It's the same me looking at the body, but I didn't make the body bigger. I didn't strengthen. I don't make my heart, you know, pump 100,000 times a day or my pancreas secrete. We trust in so much. And by the way, we also trust in the fact that gravity is going to hold us here, or that there's going to be oxygen outside for us to breathe. So 99.9% of life is all we trust in this every moment of every day. We trust that people are going to stay on their side of the road when they're driving, right? I mean, talk about coming close to death every second, right? Go drive on a freeway. I mean, it's like you're 2 feet from basically death every moment. And yet we trust in all of this. And so that's where this fourth phase really comes into, of just of trusting in life, the surrender to it. It's not non-action. It's not action. It's the middle way that you trust into life, because it knows way more than you ever will.
Adam, I think what you just said is really important, because I think so many achievers forget that there's always two sides to the coin. And if you're going to have, to your point, the joy and the love and the celebration, you also have to have the other side. And I say the same when we start to prioritize certain strengths over others. Yeah. With every great strength in a human being comes a great weakness. There's always another side to that coin, and vice versa. With every weakness they have, there must be a corresponding strength. Yes. And so I think to be able to see the duality is really, really important. And I also think that it allows us to experience this deep work for what it is, which is just something for ourselves, as opposed to what a lot of achievers are outwardly motivated. And I think what deters a lot of people from this is that, like, no one ever pats you on the back and says, you know what, Adam, I'm super proud of you for all the internal work you've been doing. Like, it just doesn't happen, right? We're celebrated for these external, yes, successes, which is one side to that coin. But the other side is that we can build this incredible outward amazing life and be miserable, yes, on the inside, which isn't success at all.
You know, I was having breakfast with the wealthiest individual in the state of Vermont, who's done a really good job of keeping himself off lists and stuff. And this is fascinating. He had just come back from, this is a few months ago, the Giving Pledge with Warren Buffett. And he was down there with 100 different billionaires, and he was one of them. And we were just talking about money and having this kind of like conversation like this. And he goes, you know, Adam, it's really fascinating. He's like, 97 out of 100 of those individuals are absolutely miserable. And he's like, you understand, these people have created so much value in the world. They have their names in hospitals, cancer patient treatment centers. They've created medicines that have, you know, that save the lives of many people around them. They've done technology that's advanced nations. I mean, they've done such an incredible amount of work that's there. That's remarkable. And yet they're walking around unsatisfied. They need more. They're trying to figure out the next thing. They're on like, there's no relationship. He's like, there's no depth to them. And he said there was basically three of them in the room that was like that. And he's like, so I'm not telling you whatever to do or what not to do, but he's like, don't buy into the fact that having all of this is going to give you what you're looking for inside. And that's kind of the whole essence of the 200% Life 2 model as well. It was just really interesting hearing that reinforced, because obviously I wasn't invited in that room. So like, it was good to have an insight from him that way.
I was going to say, to your point earlier, you talked about this law of diminishing returns. I think that when you're at that level and you've reached that, what most people would consider that type of pinnacle, there's a law of diminishing returns in the sense that if you don't locate what you actually were put on this earth to do or what actually makes you happy, it's like, sure, another $1 billion is just another $1 billion. Like if you've experienced that before, it just starts to probably, create challenges for you in understanding what actually fills you up.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's one of the common questions. I bet you both get this a lot, and people will ask it in some fashion. They'll go, you know, I need to go find my passion. And I always, I have a different answer for this that not everyone loves. And basically I always go to them and I say, well, that's wonderful. I'm glad you're asking that question, but let me ask you a different question. Why not be passion? And then anything you do, you bring passion to. Instead of trying to make it conditionally passive, passion, meaning that like, okay, when I get that job or I write that thing or I get that amount of money, then I'll be passionate about what I do. Why not start by whatever you're doing, bring passion to? And that way you're not conditionally set yourself up for any type of love of failure or success. You're showing up there and able to contribute in any way that you can.
Do you see that being with passion? Do you see a similarity with purpose also? And it's like, oh, I'm searching for purpose and I'm searching for meaning. It's like, well, how about just start with being really purposeful and intentional in your life, and then you'll discover that.
I think you need to call off the search. I mean, that's the number one thing, to just call off the search. You're already there. It's only, look, you can't find something if you're searching for it, right? Like you can't find, if the thing that you're searching for is you and you're searching, you're just searching forever. It's like the old adage is like people are reading the menu thinking that it's the meal. Well, you can read a menu and get a pretty good description of what the meal is, but you can't describe what an orange tastes like on paper unless you've actually tasted it. And people, this is why people fear death so much. People fear death because they honestly feel that life owes them some special experience they haven't had yet. They're missing the depth of experience because they keep searching so much. Whereas if you just actually call off the search and put yourself and allow yourself to be part of the experience, then death takes nothing from you. And there isn't any fear that circulates from that because you've already experienced everything you need to experience.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned Tolle a couple of times. I thought he'd done a really great job of explaining the power of presence, right? The Power of Now, I think was his book, right? And being present, yeah. I think that's a great first. You have to be present to recognize where you are and locate yourself in the first place.
Yeah. And even like when people are listening to this, like, you know, I would ask themselves as a way to kind of see if they're present, Chris, is, you know, are you listening to the conversation? Or are you listening to the mind narrate the conversation and then say, I don't really like what Adam just said right there. I really like what Nikki said, but Adam didn't make any sense right there, right? Like, are you listening to us talk? Or are you listening to the mind narrate what it likes or what it dislikes? And when people start becoming aware of this, that's the real awareness. And they become aware, which is like, oh my gosh, like my mind never stops talking. And it just talks about everything. And I've just been so glued to it forever that I don't even like, how do I even live without it? That's like literally at the first, that's what people start working and they'll go do a meditation. They go, I can't meditate. And I go, well, why can't you meditate? And they go, I had all these thoughts. And I go, congratulations, that's your meditation. That is the first step of realizing, and you don't think those thoughts are there when you're not meditating. You're just now aware that you have thoughts. All the other times you're so glued to the thought, you have no idea that you're even paying attention to one.
I love that. Well, it's also the reminder that you are going to continuously have thoughts and therefore don't need to take action on every single one of them. Well, just because the thought enters your mind doesn't mean you have to have an attachment to it. Yeah.
Think about the craziest thoughts that have come through. Like, I've been driving down the road before and they'd be like, you should just go punch that person. And I'm like, what? Like, where does that even come from? Like, it's like, I mean, the thoughts that come in there and like people get embarrassed by them. It's not like, they're not your thoughts. It's not like you acted on them or like you go, okay, I'm going to write down and write it out. Like, they just showed up. Just like if you were to turn in a radio station, they said something you didn't like you wouldn't be embarrassed by that because you're like, well, I just tuned into this. It's the same thing. Yeah. At some point, like they're probably going to be thought machines. Seriously. Like, I don't want to be around for that necessarily, but there's going to be a thought machine. And is it like a thought police? Like, it's just like, cause at some point it's just drilling down. I mean, if you said, okay, 100 years ago that we're going to be able to see a biopsy from liquid that's going to tell you whether or not you have any cancer in the middle of your body, they would be like, that's wild. Like, that's not going to happen. Again, it's just thought is just a form of energy. That's just a lower vibration that we haven't quite cracked yet, but it's probably coming.
I'm sure. Given the direction everything is going, I have to imagine we're going that way too.
Wild.
That's another podcast, Adam.
Yes, it is. I actually think that like at some point this is the total other side, but like the productivity of the workplace is going to get so strong that honestly jobs will be a choice, will be a personal choice. And literally people will look back at these eras and go, do you remember those Americans when they had to work? What would that have been like? Right? Like a couple hundred years now, just the way we're going, like if you think about 150 years ago, being overweight was lauded. It was considered wealthy because people didn't have food. Now food's ubiquitous and it's everywhere and it's the opposite. And we're doing the same thing with things, with 3D printing and AI and robots and all the stuff that's happening. We'll create such a productive society that 99% of whatever we need will be, you'll print a house, right? Or whatever it is, like at some level. And then people will look up and they'll go, there'll be some basic, you know, I don't want to get the whole thing, but like, it's like, there'll be some level where people, they'll look back in this generation, just like we looked back 50,000 years ago and be like, imagine like that life, like, wow, that would like, imagine having to like live in a cave and have like a fire and not being able to like store food or any of that stuff. I mean, it's just, it's going to happen.
Well, it'll revolutionize like everything else does. Jobs will change. People, yep. the types of jobs will disappear. It's just like the example I always give to people in businesses is at some point, someone's job was to go around the neighborhood and light the gas lamps that line the neighborhood. Right. Like that was somebody's job. And eventually they didn't need that job anymore. And I think that it'll be similar across the landscape. The cool thing that always gives me hope though, Adam, in the space of business is that I look backwards in history and realize that we just continuously repeat ourselves over and over, and over again. So if someone really wants to figure out what's coming next, just look backwards and figure out what revolution we had to go through from a human standpoint and just start to replicate that. You'll probably be the next billionaire.
Absolutely. That's for sure.
Adam, at the end of this podcast, we always ask, what's the one thing that you would want listeners to take away from this? The one thing you would want them to get from listening to this episode or that you would want to leave them with?
I could create a sentence that sounds better, but the simplistic nature of just being able to handle reality. I think that sets you up in a way that you can handle every part of your life. You can handle your personal life, your business life, and then you become a blessing and a contributor to life because you can actually handle it and act with clarity. And you see things as undisguised.
I love that. And if people want to connect with you, where can they find you?
Sure. Yeah. You can go to adamhergenrother.com and you go to Amazon or Audible for the book. And yeah, we'd love to hear feedback from people that look at and read it.
And we will link it in the show notes as well. And thank you everyone for joining us today. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the One Thing Podcast. If you're a bold risk taker who wants to dream big and achieve a higher level of success in your life or business, visit theonething.com. There you'll find information on one-on-one coaching, our exclusive community membership program, and customized workshops that will help you get your team or organization aligned and rowing in the same direction. That's the1.com to start living the life you've always dreamed of today. Be sure to follow the show to stay up to date on weekly episodes, guest interviews, and more. Plus, we would love to hear from you. Send us a voice note by going to speakpipe.com/theonething or email us at podcast@theonething.com. We'll see you next week.